Welcome to the Serial Serial, the AV Club's podcast about a podcast that is also about some podcasts that made a podcast. Every week for the next 2 months or so, a few Onion Inc. staffers will be talking about an episode of S-Town, the new podcast from the teams behind Serial and This American Life. I'm AV Club senior editor Mara Eakin, joined this week by Onion editorial director Josh Modell and AV Club co-editor Laura M. Browning. And this week we are tackling the second episode of S-Town. Guys, I'm going to go on a limb and say that the second episode of S-Town is my favorite episode because it is just packed full of twists. Two big ones. You find out that Caburn didn't kill Dylan, but that someone would end up dead. And then by the end of the episode, the very last section is about that John B. killed himself. What did you guys think about episode two?
If I was not listening to this for work, I would have stopped listening after episode two.
Because you were so...
I did not like the direction. I did not like the kind of the way they manufactured those cliffhangers. I was just so pissed off at the way they did that.
I want to remind the readers that you can tell Laura all of your thoughts at Laura M. Browning on Twitter.
She loves Pepe the Frog. If you want to send those. I think it's interesting that you use the word cliffhanger because there isn't a cliffhanger. Exactly.
It's this very manufactured kind of like, da-dum.
But then you can just like roll right into episode three. So it wasn't like...
Well, not only that, but I was wondering as I was listening to it again today, like if they went back and forth at the end of episode two about whether they would reveal that he was dead at the end of episode two. And I think it was smart that they did because then you want to know what happened for episode three. But it's definitely not... I mean, I guess the cliffhanger is how did it happen? But we had already heard multiple times that he was depressed and talked about suicide. So.
And they do, and Skylar does say at the end, John B. killed himself.
Yeah.
So we know, okay, it was either gun or...
Yeah.
But the way he kills himself is actually kind of a surprise in episode three.
That's tough.
I remember when I was first listening through this that I texted Andrew, my husband, whatever, that I was like, whoa, there's a big twist in episode two because we were kind of listening at the same time. And he was like, I'm not there yet. Don't spoil it or whatever. And then, but that was when we found out that Caburn didn't kill Dylan. And then I remember getting to the end of it and being like, whoa, shit.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, just there was no murder.
Yeah.
So it almost sort of like, oh, well, where else do we go in this podcast?
Because right before the break, they say Caburn didn't kill Dylan, but like there was a death that was contributed to by this town. And you're like, oh, man, is there some like correct, like, is it Tyler? Do you know what I mean? Like, so who's getting covered up? And then you find out it's John B. And I said this in episode one of Serial Serial, but I feel like it was so shocking because you felt like, oh, this guy is going to be around. Like, he's my new favorite character. I don't know.
And it's not like he leaves. I mean, I think it's sort of the springboard for learning about his life from a lot of the people that were in it. So, I think, I mean, it's the strength of Serial Serial. I actually, not to disagree with you, host.
Oh, please disagree.
But to me, like, this was not necessarily my least favorite episode because I think they're all really strong. But I think a lot of this was kind of waiting around to get to that. And there's a huge chunk of this episode that takes place in the, you know, whatever club, tattoo parlor
place.
That's right, Black Sheep Inc. Is more about talking about what this town is like and what the people are like. And you get a little bit into, I mean...
Racism.
Racism. I just, like... A little bit into, like, is this exploitative of this town? Is this, like, a caricature of this town by just kind of talking to these guys? Or is this really what – are these guys representative of the town? And it's interesting and it's colorful, but I don't know that it tells that much about the John B. story or the murder story.
I think I'll give – you know, I always feel this way when people would pick on Sarah Koenig or pick on whatever. I'm, with the exception of Missing Richard Simmons, I guess I'm going to give Brian Reed the benefit of the doubt. Do you know what I mean? Like, he has spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And so he hopefully knows what that town is like and what a lot of people are like. And in later episodes, he talks to people that are not tattooed 21-year-old guys.
True. That's a good point.
that live in the town and talk about why they love it and stuff like that. So we don't get it right away. But I suppose that you, when you just drive through a town, you don't get the whole picture of a town anyways.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like sort of irresistible to have like the big fat guy with the feed me tattoo.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't tell anything about John B or about the story really, but it's like, okay, I met this guy and like
it's like the guy from Varsity Blues.
Yeah, right. Only real. But I guess we do. Do we start to find out in this episode, in that context, that John is like getting himself tattooed, even though he hates tattoos, because he's sort
he's
of this
helping them
philanthropist.
Out.
And,
yeah. I was going to ask, what did you guys think about that guy's name was Bubba, the guy that was telling the story, Bubba and Tyler on Black Sheep Inc. What did you guys think about his story about John getting tattoos when the bills came due? I thought it was very sweet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I did too.
It gives you some more humanity. John's not just this climate change scientist. He's also he seems to enjoy the people he's around.
Yeah, he has a love-hate relationship with the town and its people and himself.
Yeah.
Like he's really a sort of complex person in and maybe, you know, the fat guy with the Feed Me tattoo is like just a sort of way to cast John into relief of like he's like a complex person in this town that has bred a lot of really simple people with simple desires. Mm-hmm. Like I just want to eat and I don't want to change my hat and that's fine.
But you're also getting like a picture of that guy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like we are not getting the seven episodes about the Feed Me guy tattoo.
That's
like,
true. Although that could be a good spin-off.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of it today. The Guardian interviewed him.
The fat guy with the tattoo?
Yeah, his name is Huck or he goes by the name Huck.
Wow, I want to see that.
So they showed, the Guardian interviewed that guy?
Yeah, they showed the tattoo. It's
did they interview other people from the show or just that guy?
It was just an article about...
We got to get Huck on the show. Huck, if you're listening, give us a call.
Mm-hmm. I want Huck. I want Skylar.
Yeah.
She was very charming. She reminded me a lot of Andrew's cousins.
But yeah, he sort of hates these people, but like that's who he hangs out with. And I think Brian Reed makes an interesting point that he's like, they kind of hate John a little bit too, but they're like, they embrace him as one of us.
Yeah, he's a black sheep.
I have so many questions about Brian Reed going into Black Sheep Inc.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to ask about. Like that, you know, during this episode specifically, everyone's like, why don't you just call Cabram? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just call him? Here's his sister right here.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell you, you know? And he was just like, no. Do you know what I mean?
I think I better not.
Yeah.
I'm from New York, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, it is, I wouldn't call him either,
yeah.
You know?
But he also makes a point of like, he's like, yeah, I told him I was Italian, but I left off the Russian Jew.
Yeah. Like, and I didn't tell him about my African-American girlfriend, now my wife.
Right.
You know, like, I thought it was interesting that he had to make his Facebook private.
He did that when his now wife's family suggested he did that.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
They knew.
But actually, that sort of assumes that these guys in this town are not only racist, but they're like, you know, criminals that are going to
trolls.
And like, that's a little over the top to me. It like automatically assumes that because they're like awful people in the moment and saying the worst shit that they're actually going to sort of act on it. Because like, do we really think that like, if they knew he was half Jewish, they were going to beat him up or something?
I would say he should have made that profile private anyways, because he's a radio reporter.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like my Instagram is private because I don't want everyone to know what the inside of my apartment looks like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So, okay, here's a short little story that's a little bit of a digression.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
When I was 17 and figuring out what college to go to, I picked a college in Massachusetts. And the Texas side of my family, my mom's side of the family, could not fucking understand. Like, it was legitimately a bigger family scandal than my cousin who went through drug rehab.
Massachusetts.
Like,
why do you
seriously,
want to go somewhere civilized?
No, they were just like, why do you want to go live with a bunch of damn Yankees? Mm. Like, why can't you stay here? One of my aunts was like, Laura, you can come live with me. You can go to Cook County College. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was – and my dad, who is from the Midwest and has been married to my mother since 1970,
whoa,
has always been, like, the Yankee. Like, they gave him – like, my grandma, until she died in 1996, like, continued to give him a hard time. Like, it eventually became affectionate, but, like
– they didn't murder him or anything.
They didn't murder him, but, like, it's a really big deal that, like, you're from up north – and so, like, I just have so many questions about what it was like for Brian Reed, like, going into this town and of that I, in my mind, is very much like my mom's hometown of, like, was he that accepted? Like, did they really bring him in as one of his own? Were they, like, making fun of him behind his back? Like,
probably a little.
Did he smoke weed with him? That's what
the Yeah, he did.
Out of a bowl, out of an antler.
Oh, yeah. So.
But he faked it.
Oh,
because he was like, I don't want to be a narc. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but he did drink Wild Turkey with Tyler and John, too, and all that stuff. So maybe he...
He earned his
way in. I kind of felt like they were rolling with him. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think your story, Laura, is very valid. And, like, there's these two terrible bars in this hometown that Andrew's mom and stepdad live in. And it's always like, hey, like, you know, the night before Thanksgiving is the biggest bar night of the year. My parents talk about it. And I'm like, oh, what bar should we go to? Like, what should we check out while we're here? And they're like, don't go to either of those bars. Like, they are terrible bars. Like, do not go there. They are for bad people, you know? And I think that I always think about, you know, scenes from a movie where you walk into the bar and the record scratches and whatever. And I think that that is totally a possible thing that happens. But I also felt like they really opened up to him and gave him a lot of good stories. And because Tyler and John probably vouched for him, he got pretty far. And I kind of wonder how much of us and Brian Reed and, you know, his wife's family or whatever – thinking about these bars is also just like, well, they're different. They're different. Well, they're different. You know what I mean? Like, I'm this enlightened New Yorker or whatever. They wouldn't, you know, they don't understand me or whatever. Yeah. And how much of that is just assigned to that kind of thing or the people or me as listening to this podcast or all that kind of stuff.
He seemed to fit in. It reminded me a little bit, if I can digress on something I love to talk about. The fucking host on this Vice TV show. It's like white nerdy guy who like this one episode he goes and hangs out with.
Chief Keef.
Chief Keef.
Remember that. Yeah. And they were like, we're in the Chicago suburbs. I'm like, you were in Logan Square. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, but he's like so nervous about hanging out with them. And he's like the worst. And they're just – and this guy, Brian Reed, I think is much, much smoother. Mm-hmm. But I do recommend that Vice episode because he's so awkward and it's awful.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Just be cool. Just roll into that bar and ask the bartender questions and don't be a weirdo.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Guys, another big part of this episode was sort of really getting to know more about John, but not from John, from people that know John. And the question came up, what is John worth? What do you guys think? What is John worth? What do you think about where he put all his money? His gold, 20 ounces of gold, Tyler and
I think he's
Jake.
Worth a totally normal. I don't think he's like. As Ron Swanson gold bars somewhere.
I will say that you're on episode 5, so you don't really know.
Okay, so maybe he does have, maybe he is Ron Swanson, they find the gold, but
He could not be Paul Allen, you know, but he could have a lot of money for that town.
He could, if he had $100,000, he'd have a lot of money.
If he had $5 million in that town, I'd be like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, based on some stuff in the later episodes, I guess, I buy that he had some money. Plus, like, if he was getting all these tattoos and dropping this money, and they say, you know, he told Brian he spent $60,000 on the hedge maze, like, and he's paying people to come work at his place. Like,
a decent amount of money, like, not, you know, hey, I'll give you $5 an hour to come over here or whatever.
He also was, quote, unbanked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And gold has only gotten stronger if he puts it all in gold.
How much is 20 ounces of gold worth? Did either of you look it up? I didn't look it up.
It's a lot.
I'm going to Google it. You guys keep talking.
All right, we'll keep talking.
But I feel like he's a little bit more normal than other people in the town think, and that it is probably something relative. Mm-hmm. I kind of missed this the first time around and caught it in my second listen that the Burke family are actual millionaires.
Yeah. They seem like dickbags, but yeah.
But there is like substantial wealth in the town.
Well, they own
like more ostentation.
That is like that's the stereotypical the one family that owns the one thing. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like KKK.
Yeah, the lumber mill. Like,
but that's not a coincidence.
And that has the money to make more money and has you know what I mean? Isn't just always struggling to live.
20 ounces of gold to be worth like $25,000 to $30,000. So if he's worth a few hundred thousand dollars, like,
yeah,
which seems more likely. And we learn later that when he was fixing clocks, he was probably making 150 grand
yeah.
a year or more. So,
well, they said he could make that.
He said he could make that if he basically works, like, didn't try to work.
They're like, he could work 3 days a week yeah. and make that much money.
So who knows? I mean, clearly everyone thinks he's rich and it's a point of conversation, which is interesting, I guess.
I will say that $25,000 is like, oh, that's okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for like Tyler, who's on daughter number four, mm-hmm. living across the street in the trailer park with girlfriend number four, probably that can make a big difference.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I just mean like, I guess I'm extrapolating a lot, but I feel like if he's worth $5 million, then I don't think he would think they're each getting 20 ounces of gold is a lot. Plus, where's the rest of his money going?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, his mom, maybe?
Yeah. So I guess in my head, I was just doing the calculation of like, oh, if he feels like that's a lot, maybe it's like a third of what he's worth. Maybe it's a tenth of what he's worth. But that, mm-hmm. none of that's even close to these millions of dollars.
The episode, jumping back, the episode starts off with this bit about the South 40 trailer park, which is where Tyler lives. And that girl who's on the street not wearing any pants, she's just wearing a shirt and on the phone. And Roger, the guy with the 1-2, said he went to the truck stop with John, says, usually when you see jokers that look like that, they've done something to look like that. And then Brian kind of says, you know, I figured out what that story really meant later. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think it means? I'm still not sure that I know.
Well, I mean, I think Brian was trying to say, and sorry if I'm fucking you up here, Brian, like what he felt like was that the guy with one tooth was having no empathy for that person. Mm-hmm. And that John was a person and maybe the only person in the town who had real empathy.
Yeah.
Who was sort of emotionally grown enough to think like, you know, oh, just because that person is there doesn't mean they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very liberal attitude for a town that's probably like more conservative than we could ever imagine.
John did have a very liberal attitude.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, I can't remember if this came up in episode 2 or later, but when people are kind of talking about him being queer,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's like, I mean, it's fine with me. It's fine with me.
It's not in episode 2. I believe it is in episode 3.
Okay.
So that's okay.
Spoiler alert.
Well, episode 2 is...
Well, they all say it's fine with them, but
it's like
sure they would give it to him 100%. Do you know what I mean? Like, they'd be like, I don't even want to say what I think they would say, but... They'd be like, it's fine with me, but they'd give him a hard time about it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like the fact that you have to even say, oh, it's okay with me is sort of like, I have black friends.
Yeah, well, he's one of the good ones. Is right. Basically all
yeah.
it is.
And so I can also imagine that he just, you know, he has a different sexual identity than most people are open about in the town. He has like at least part of a college education. Mm-hmm. Like he's very intellectually curious. Like he's automatically... Like, regardless of what his political beliefs are, extremely liberal.
I guess that the story about the trailer park lady also kind of, I guess, now that really thinking about it and hearing what you're talking about, it kind of sounds like that fuck it mentality that he also talks about later mm-hmm. in the show. And just this kind of like, well, it is what it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, she has no pants on. Something must have happened, but it's not my problem. You know what I mean? I'm not going to stop and ask her.
Yeah, and it's like, well, it's somehow her fault.
Yeah. Or if you want to know what Kabrahm did, why don't you just ask Kabrahm?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't need to guess and, you know, things are black and white.
Yeah.
Kabrahm also said, low-down dirty shit happens when you hang out with low-down dirty people.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. I agree with that, too.
Kabrahm, you're a wise man if you're still alive.
Yeah. And it's not just in Woodstock, Alabama. It can be literally anywhere.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, I was going to say, what did you think of Kabrahm Burt? A young man.
I don't know that I even left with much of an impression of Kabrahm Burt. He sort of blended into the mm-hmm. mosaic of like...
Yeah, you kind of like dudes. At episode 1, you're like, oh man, what'd this guy do? He sounds like kind of a tough ass. And then you're like, nope, he's just like a... He thought it was scary.
Yeah.
And then he almost killed that guy.
And he says, I wouldn't brag on that if I killed... Like, I didn't believe that.
It's not a deer.
Yeah, right. I can definitely see him... spreading a rumor that he mm-hmm. killed somebody.
And his dad saying cool. he wouldn't forgive him.
Yeah, that whole, like, dad digression on the phone
mm-hmm.
seemed like a total flight of fancy. Like, just an unrelated thing that they brought back a couple times.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who are you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day. We are the real Brady Bros.
All right, we are back. Guys, there's a lot of time talk in S-Town, understandably. You know, astrolabes, sundials, clocks. Even the first episode starts off with stuff about the passage of time. Mm-hmm. Something in the second episode, they talk about sundials and mottos on sundials, like tedious and brief. Did you guys think about what if you had a sundial, what you'd put on it?
Oh, my God. I couldn't come up with a slogan. I'll try now. But I actually found that idea, and I haven't looked at this any further, that sundials have these depressing mottos on them.
I love it.
Love it. It's amazing.
Like, yeah.
Maybe the coolest thing that we learned from S-Town and will remember. Mm-hmm.
That's like when you see old gravestones, like if you ever go to a cemetery that has like stuff from the 1800s where they're like, you know, time is past, like time is done or whatever. It's never like, you know, I mean, they'll say loving father or whatever.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, she's in the hands of Jesus or whatever. And then it was just like dust to dust.
I saw a gravestone a couple of years ago, like a brand new one of a girl who was like maybe 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. And the back of the gravestone said something like, dang. Like, I was like, okay, so that's what we do now on gravestones. Like, but that's sort of the same as like
you
the
passage of time. You can get a TV on them now.
Is that right?
They can. Oh, you can like have like a looping video screen of like, you know, this is Josh's life.
I would do like a tasty video of chocolate chip cookies and just be like, I'm going.
You should make a smell-o-vision grave.
Oh, man.
I want my body donated to science.
Lame. I'm just kidding. It's totally not. It's totally reasonable.
What do you think they're going to learn from you? What are you so special?
My dad also wants that.
Oh, really?
But it's weird because like this is a whole separate thing. I liked tedious and brief. I thought it was a good one. Maybe not tedious, but I like the brief part. Oh. I thought tedious and brief was it would be like a good tattoo. I don't know.
That's I wonder. It's sort of a paraphrase of nasty, brutish, and short, which is I can't remember who that is.
Hobbes.
That's
sure our readers will correct us.
Yes,
correct me if I'm wrong.
That's why I didn't want to make a guess. I didn't want to be correct.
I think it's Hobbes.
But yeah, I mean, it sort of leads. it leads directly into like there's another reference before we learn of his fate that that someone thought that John McLemore was going to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba says, you know, I thought when he was getting all those tattoos, he's like the first thing I thought. He's like, oh, he's going to get covered with tattoos because he's going to blow his head off right after that.
Yeah,
so like it's just totally open knowledge in Woodstock that this guy is like knowledgeable and crazy and people like him. He's going to kill himself, which is kind of insane. Like that everyone just knows.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
But also like if you're living in a town that small, it might not be within your memory that somebody has killed themselves. Like it might be in still very abstract where I think like.
Well, I also say it could just be a black and white thing. Like,
right.
Yeah, that
business.
Guy's going to kill himself. Yeah. Like, nothing I can do about it. Yeah. You know what
I mean?
It's
like that one with no pants. Like, she did something to get herself there, and John B.'s going to do it at some point.
Or, like, if someone happened to die of natural causes, they're dead.
Yep.
You know what I mean? What's going to happen to their stuff?
But I also feel like if you live, if your situation is such that your social circle is much wider than sort of the people within your town, that there's just a greater possibility that you're sort of more tuned in of like how to help or like maybe you knew somebody who were friend of a friend.
That's also a very like emotional kind of thing to do. And I would say that maybe these guys aren't super in touch with their emotions or don't know how to handle their emotions. I also think that it's like kind of if their town is not firmly set in 2017, this kind of like messing in other people's business or wanting to talk about stuff is not the oldest the thing that we've ever done, like, you know, in the 30s and 40s and 50s, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's another sundial motto.
I guess
so
one
it's
of
not
the,
sad enough for some.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found a little irritating, I guess, about this episode, and I think that from everything I've listened to so far, I mean, I think that Brian Reed did a fine job of this, but it is still like this intruder kind of coming in and imposing these like big ideas about the passage of time on this like clearly mentally ill man in this like small town, and like we're all talking about like this small town in America, like we know what we're talking about, but like nobody really does. Like, mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know about Brian Reed. I haven't read his background. Maybe he grew up in a very small town. Probably not Woodstock, Alabama.
Probably not in the South.
Yeah, he's probably from the suburbs. If right. I had to guess, I can go look. Let me prove me wrong. I'll look right after this.
But I find it so hard to sort of grapple with the ethics of all of this, even though it's like it's not an issue of, you know, missing Richard Simmons, mm-hmm. and it's. I think clearly Brian Reed has done good work, but it's just everything made me so uncomfortable that he's like trying to pull these narrative twists out of this like guy's life. And I do think that it ended up as this kind of love letter to him, but mm-hmm. it just, I'm like, like Cameron Bird is a person and like.
Yeah, but Cameron Bird is just
he
like.
He turns out okay.
Yeah,
I
he's
think it's,
fine.
I would be fine if I were him.
And
like,
I think
that's
this
cool.
The saving grace of this thing for me, like the whole thing is like, John B. McLemore clearly listening to S-Town in Heaven is like into it.
Oh,
like,
I think that's, I yeah. agree. That's probably true.
So like, I was going to ask you.
I don't believe in heaven. I was just being silly.
I don't think John B. McLemore believes in heaven.
That's true.
Wherever, you know, if someone, whatever. Laura, I was going to ask you.
Week.
So what you're saying, does that mean you would have rather had someone from Woodstock make this podcast about Woodstock or John B. McLemore has to tell his own story, or do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I think it's
what could he have satisfied you in
well,
some way?
Well, I think he could have satisfied me if the framing had been different. I feel like he was trying to impose a narrative and some really big ideas on a story that really could have spoken for itself, and a person who could have really spoken for itself. And the episodes that I've listened to thus far are like extremely heavy on Brian Reed talking. And although he does obviously use a lot of, interviews and there's a lot of conversations with people, it's a lot of like his exposition. And I think that John B. McLemore is like this amazing guy and character, and you don't need to pull these twists and you don't need to like make these statements about time. And I don't know, I just
like all that stuff.
I found it really frustrating.
And I think that but the twists are
there's not that many,
and they're the twists as they happen to Brian Reed. Like we find out as far along in the story as the podcast is when he found out that he was dead.
But is the
when
podcast
we
about
out.
Brian Reed or John B?
Oh, it's come on! All journalism is about the journalist and the subject. We know that.
I would also say that I think Brian Reed would call himself a journalist, but like any story that's on This American Life or Serial, it's as much about it's not as much about Sarah Koenig as it is Adnan or whatever, but you're certainly seeing it through her lens, and she's the one in your ears.
I have way more ethical problems with season one of Serial than I do with S-Town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which isn't to say I have a lot, but I think, like, Sarah and Julie inserted themselves in that story way more than Brian does here. And to me, like, this podcast feels like a really good magazine article, and
yeah.
it can get flowery in that way.
I'm going to include some, if it was like on April 14th, John B. McLemore killed him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if it was that and this would not have gotten made. Like it is a story.
Maybe you just don't like stories.
Maybe that's it.
Or good things.
Maybe that's it. I don't like joy. Life is
life is short.
Life is tedious.
Or it's like
tedious.
A movie or like a documentary. It's like a documentary. Like
I felt
you
like
you gotta pace it.
I felt like I would have been much more into it had it been some sort of magazine story or vignette. And it's not that I have necessarily like these clear cut ethical problems. Is it makes me uncomfortable. Like it's in that direction more than it is. Like it's not like this clear violation of ethics, but I don't know. I just feel like there was a different way of framing it.
It sounds like you do not adhere to the fuck it mentality. You're just like, no.
It's weird because you're from Texas. You're supposed to adhere to the fuck it mentality.
Well, everyone, you can hit us on Twitter, Mara E. Are you Josh Waddell on Twitter? I'm Laura M. Browning.
No, I'm LMB.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, make sure to tell Laura what you think then at LMB, E-L-L-E-M-B-E-E.
Sorry.
With Pepe gifts.
Yep.
Definitely send like, it, haters. All her thoughts, all your thoughts. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I think I already said that. But I'm Mara Eakin. I've been joined by Josh Modell and Laura M. Browning. This show was produced by Stephen Holliger for the Fusion Media Group. This show was also produced by our executive director of audio, Mandana Mofidi. Our theme song is by The Hood Internet. Do you have a question you want to send us and not just Laura specifically? You can post a tweet using the hashtag #SerialSerial. You can find us on iTunes, Panoply, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts. We will see you all next week for episode 3. Bye.